Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome in to Bartholomew Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. Today, my conversation with the executive producer of the Newport Folk and Jazz Festivals, Jay Sweet. Hi, Jay.
Hey, man.
How you doing?
I'm emotionally exhausted. How are you?
Emotionally exhausted. I think physically exhausted, too. It's kind of manifesting itself at that level as well at this point, I think, for everybody at certain moments of the day, at least, you know?
Yeah.
But we shall prevail.
I've already been on 3 conference calls and it's 11 o'clock. Yeah. We shall indeed.
It's interesting how Zoom has become this. I literally installed it a few days ago and now I'm like, all right, this could be a critical element of our communication going forward. You know, not even necessarily replacing in-person meetings, but it could just be a new way to get messaging out there on a micro level once this is all over. So
I agree, especially though, I don't know if you saw if they can handle their privacy issues. I don't know if you saw that there's an investigation on how much they're dealing with our facial recognition and everything in the background and,
oh man,
like everything, you know, Big Brother, it's always there.
Look out. But anyway, thanks so much for hopping on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So let's get right into, first of all, the Festivals Foundation stepped up and has presented essentially a grant opportunity for artists right now who are out of work, frankly. And there's a big gap in our unemployment system, so to speak, certainly until there's a significant change at the federal level where musicians, even established touring musicians, really have no way to claim any kind of benefit. So the Festival Foundation stepped up, released a program yesterday. Why don't we get right into that operation?
Yeah, I do want to say that it was interesting this how this kind of came to be. It's always about story, right? I'm always about the story of it. And I had seen South by Southwest, it was canceled. And when that happened, we were in the middle of doing one of our artist gives when we announce an artist and we then pick a program with that artist. And make a donation in their name to a music education or a music program, usually with where they're from or someplace where they now live that means something to them in their local community. And I had a phone call with our old friend, Maddie Vasquez from Delta Spirit and Glorietta. And I said, hey, you know, is there a program you want me to give to? And he said, actually, I'm in a very weird position where there's a bunch of artists in need here in Austin because of the cancellation of South by Southwest. And there's a pop-up COVID relief fund happening in Austin. I know it's not a music program, but they're helping musicians. Do you mind if we put our attention towards that? I was like, of course. Mm-hmm. And then that one moment, and then I was having an exchange with James and Kim Taylor, and they had just given that $1 million. I don't know if you saw that to the Massachusetts health system to help try to fight this. And I wrote him a nice note and just said, you know, that's incredibly kind. And then I had heard from Jackson Brown that he was infected. And then I just said, well, I was getting these heart-wrenching stories from friends and family of the festivals, folk and jazz. And it wasn't rocket science to realize that maybe reallocating some of our funds to programs that actually can't use the money right now. That sounds horrible because there is no school for music education.
Right.
You know, and we are still helping those communities. You know, if they're doing online education and stuff, but some of these were just built on, we go into schools and we do this, right? So I just said, listen, if we can reallocate some of this to help, you know, this, hopefully I'd love to get back to our regular scheduled programming on giving to music education and music funding. But at this point, if you hear some of the heart-wrenching stories that I hear on a now minute-by-minute basis, emails are coming in. I mean, these aren't, hey man, I couldn't tour and now I really love some cash. This is, I'm trying to figure out how to apply for food stamps. I'm thinking of having to live in my van because rent is too much. And that's just tough, man. It's just tough. So, I asked the board if we could reallocate these funds. They agreed on a pilot program and we set it up yesterday. And, not to get into specifics, but let's just say that the, demand is far outweighing the supply. We are terrified of exhausting our funds way before we were ready. So we're kind of now, we had some reallocated funds and we were like, this is adamant. We don't want to do a fundraiser. We don't want to go ask people who don't have money, you know, to give right now. We just don't want to do it. We have some, let's give it out. It's a lot. So what we're going to try to do is, you know, I think it's a fluid thing as by the way, without asking money, we still raised a big chunk of change yesterday saying, hey, we proactively, I think you probably saw my statement. I was like, this is not a fundraiser. We have this, we're reallocating the funds. Didn't matter. People started giving us some of their funds and every 100% of it is going right back out the door. But I did want to put a ray of good light is we had decided this and then with our friend John Prine getting sick, that emotionally really hit home. And we said, we felt we were as ready as we were going to be. We could have tinkered with the system and found more. And we said, you know, wait another 5, 6, 7 days to get this thing out. And I just said, absolutely not. Just if we screw it up, at least people know we're trying. So we sent it out yesterday and luckily nothing collapsed and everything came through. But and it was really one of the most powerful things since this whole thing started was having John's family in the middle of this crisis, John Prine's family, post our thing saying, you know, here's a little light in the darkness. We love you guys. And, you know, that for them to be pushing out our message about helping musicians in need, when they're in the middle of John being basically in a self, you know, into a coma, put into a coma to try to fight COVID was pretty powerful. But again, the light that I was seeing is we did do a great phone call with Riska yesterday, which basically is going to be working with the governor's office on the money that should be landing pretty soon from the NEA and, you know, our federal stimulus package that will be going from federal stimulus to NEA, NEA to the states, in this case, the governors. And then the governor we were on the phone with Riska yesterday because they were telling us that they were trying to announce this week a program to help Rhode Island musicians, touring artists specifically with a grant program. And as soon as we said, you would be crazy if you didn't enlist us to help you spread the word on that. So they readily agreed that they were very thankful that our program came out to fill the gap between us being able to start releasing funds this Friday to when they're going to do applications, to when then they're going to release funds. That might be a week, 2 weeks from now. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when you're trying to find your next paycheck. So to your point is I think we fortunately are filling this kind of 2 week gap between when the state of Rhode Island can pick up and start supporting its artists.
Right.
So we're glad we could do it. And we're glad we're just a stopgap, but you know, this thing that keeps coming in my head is sometimes it feels like I'm handing out band-aids on a battlefield. But you know, got to do something.
Definitely. And you're nimble enough that unlike a state agency or anything like that, that you can manifest in this moment. You have that flexibility as an organization and it's right within the confines of your broad mission, I would assume.
It's funny you should say that. It was, I'm perhaps being too honest here, but it's flirting with the gray area of what our mission is. Look, our thing is about music education, right? And creating and planting the seeds for the next generation that can play our festivals. It's that simple, because we all know, and we don't need to get into how important music education is, right? But it's hard, because not a lot of people are funding music education right now. It's an easy thing to cut. You know, so many more football fields get, you know, better turf, better grass, better uniforms, and music program doesn't get money for 6, 7, 8 years, right? So we saw that need, and we are trying to focus on it. But again, if that generation between the ones we're seeding, you know, the younger, young generation, between the ones that then play our festival, there's a group that is playing our festival right now. And if we lost an entire generation of musicians, it's not going to help spread music education. And now a lot of these people to income when we get back to normal are teaching classes online. A lot of our own musicians that play our festival are finding income from, they're becoming some music teachers on the side. And so what I'm saying is, we definitely feel like there's a little bit of a gray area with our mission statement, but at the same token, it was a pretty easy call to the board saying, extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures, and we are supposed to be nimble. So I'm begging you to just let me reappropriate funds. This is funds we already had. This, you know, this isn't, hey, can we take some money out of our whatever and put, this was, look, we have this money budgeted. It needs to get into the hands of these people right now, not 5, 6 months from now, whether we know the festivals are going or not going. It needs to be right now, or these people are going to wither,
right,
the vine. And it was nimble, but it was definitely, you know, a tough five days of pushing. And my staff, man, I got to give huge shouts to my staff, you know, just pushing them really hard to basically create a program, create a landing site, create a mechanism with which artists can get paid, create nimble, but also a task that was with a staff of, you know, less than 5 people.
Right. And the IT aspect of it, no overstatement to say how critical it is just to make sure, as you mentioned, the website doesn't crash. I mean, that's not an easy job in and of itself.
No, especially because, as we talked about, with so much on like Zoom and the tube being very, very full right now, yeah, to have a huge influx of people come to the site at once when we usually only keep that open for when tickets go on sale, yeah, and when the lineup comes out, or those things, or those are, you know, we know when to grow our pipe and shrink our pipe. And we were very thankful that it technically it worked yesterday.
Something that's fascinating to me anyway, as a musician and being around artists who play the folk festival, and is the perception from maybe festival goers, people on the outside world, that if you're performing at an event like the Newport Folk Festival or whatever, that means that you're fiscally sound, you've got everything together. And we're seeing elements of the quote-unquote gig economy exposed, especially here in Rhode Island, where there's a lot of emphasis placed on restaurants and the creative capital, et cetera. But then when the rug gets pulled out, the mechanics to help those people are almost completely absent, except for in the sense of the private sector, as what you're participating in here. But it's fascinating. I guess, can you speak to the life of a musician in 2020, even an established, yeah, successful performer?
It's a great thing, is it, and you bring up a great point in just how it all goes down, and the domino effect is, I mean, I think we all realize that artists don't make money anymore off of recorded music. It's nothing but marketing for their live events. And that obviously has completely flipped, where it used to be live was the marketing for buying a recorded. Now it's you use recorded music or stuff you build and studio stuff to basically as a marketing effort towards your live, where all the money comes in. That's one. And so since that stopped, but then you also have to think that that's also playing live is what pushes merchandise out the door, because people buy in a fit of, I want to remember this moment. So they buy something from the merch table. And that's where the majority, it's an interesting thing where the majority of those touring funds come from is in merch. Meaning the above the line, right? The profit center is in merch. And then that, you know, more people do that. And then when they have seen the artist, their streaming numbers go up. So then that creates more people on the recorded music. So you understand, obviously, that the minute you take away the prime domino in that, all the dominoes kind of fall off to the side. And the hardest thing about that is, and I'm obviously not naming names, but of the list of people that filled out our form, you would be shocked at the recognizable names that are on there.
Yeah.
And it isn't about being, it is about, you know, you have this thing of, oh, if they play on the main stage or one of the stages at Newport, they obviously, they're going to do fine. The bigger they are, the more support they have. And so it's not maybe them fiscally, but they might be okay, but it means their bus driver, their merch person, their roadie, their guitar tech, the jobs that go around those people as they get bigger, all those people don't have work right now.
Right.
Now, so, and those people are just, if not equally as important as the people that you see on the stage or the people on the wings of the stage. Those people aren't, to your point, are pure gig economy. They only work tour to tour. So they're not on salary and they're not the owners of the LLC and these things. So it's a crazy time right now to be in this industry. And I think we all need a sense of hope, which is why I want to talk about what we are going to continue making artist lineup announcements for the folk festival. There was a lot of talk about, is it, you know, yelling into the wind, but with everything that's happening, but we feel that if we can be eternal optimists and give one little aspects of hope that we're going to keep our artist announcements going. There's no point into not, other than, you know, we feel if we do that, we're going to draw some attention to them. So maybe you do buy a piece of merch. Maybe you do stream them. Maybe you write them a letter of encouragement or send them a note saying, we love you, you know, keep strong. That's a currency that I think all bands need at the moment.
Right. And it's not in this particular saga, you know, I think back to, I don't know, World War II, the sailor kissing the nurse in Times Square. I remember my dad talking about someone coming down the street when World War II was over, banging pots and pans and celebrating it. We may never have such a moment with this where it's like, okay, we did it. But if we all find ourselves at the fort in July, that's that moment for us. And it gives you something to work towards and a reason to also stay inside and knock off this nonsense.
I did a PSA thing on Friday, which was supposed to be a PSA and then ended up being this mini catharsis of people who were just dreaming of being all together in July. Right. And,
is that with Patterson Hood and Ian?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching.
Dude. And
yeah.
Tallest Man on Earth and yeah. Devin Gilfit. By the way, Patterson was the only guest who was scheduled. Nice. And then it was just like, I'm looking and I have my phone was blowing up being like, hey, invite me. I want to come talk. And this was just to talk to the other folk family, you know, the artist, we weren't out there and making, hey, will you come on our show? We just started. And that's where that need comes in. But you just brought up such a good point. The word that keeps coming back is catharsis, right? I mean, if there's a poetic sweetness to it, it's not irony, but a poetic sweetness. If the very first festival in the country back were to be Newport, which was the very first festival in the country, if the very first one back after this whole crisis is Newport, there's a sense of sweet poetry to that I think will make our annual family hang even that much bigger. You know, I talk about the high five line, you know, like if we have to do it with gloves and Purell, that's fine, but I still need that five line at the end of the day, you know? Yeah. It's fascinating because while I'm so happy and thankful for our audience who keep reminding us that we're all trying to pull that, it's really amazing how many musicians who are playing much bigger festivals and whatever, just saying, please tell me that Newport is happening, whether they're coming in or not.
Yeah.
Because it is this weird thing I hear from artists who are like, it's the reason, I mean, last year we had 13 different groups that weren't playing the festival who on a day off or a weekend off just came to hang.
Yeah.
You know, and then, oh, somebody canceled. Oh, I'll jump up. I mean, it's like, we're so fortunate but that hope of it happening versus the responsibility, you know, kind of intersects on me and the staff. And at one point our highs are really high when you hear a very famous artist be like, my whole tour is canceled, which was allowing me to get to your festival to play for your bullshit stipend because we don't pay artists anything. Right. And he's like, I will lose thousands of dollars coming to play you, but if you're still happening, even though my whole tour, I'm there. So it gives you this sense of, oh my God, that's so kind, right? And then at the same token, the stories we've been talking about on artists just trying to make it till the next week, you know, and it's just a lot. And to your point is, just stay the hell inside. Like, because, you know, if we do it now, the sacrifice right now, the payoff is so much greater if we can commune together at the festival. And I think it's needed. And I think the more we screw around with it now, that those chances keep moving, you know, further away from positive action.
I agree. And it's obviously it's not really worth it to go back in time and say, oh, we could have done this, should have done this. No. But, you know, at the same time, if you look back to like St. Patrick's Day in Newport and people crowding the streets, they didn't do a good job of handling the situation, canceling the parade at the municipal level. We got to learn from those experiences immediately, shut it down, and just get to a point where hopefully by this summer, we have this thing under control so we can resume our lives in a sense, in many ways here in Rhode Island, is at the peak season, not just the folk festival and jazz festival, but
well, let's talk about that for a second. Obviously you look at, you know, I don't know if you know, but the festivals bring in almost $60 million in economic impact, yep. Which quite frankly, other than two other things, the restaurants, meaning, so we're like number three. So it's like the first is the beaches. They count the beaches, right? So it's the beaches, then the restaurants, and then the festivals are kind of the three big economic tourism drivers, right? That bring economic development besides the local economy that just works off of itself. I'm talking about the influx economy.
Yep.
And, you know, I've had these amazing conversations with, you know, local government and state government. I said that the scary thing is if you're gonna, I'm trying to look at hope, but if for some reason the festivals can't happen, that means the beaches are closed. So imagine, I mean, I know they're closed up. I don't know where they closed. They're closed where I live up in North Shore of Massachusetts, but the beaches are closed. You can't step foot on a beach right now. Mm. It's okay in the middle of, you know, late spring or early spring. Imagine if the beaches are closed all summer.
Yeah.
So forget the festivals. The festivals that, I mean, I'm being obviously, you know, myopic on my own things that I want to happen, but imagine if you had to live in Rhode Island for an entire summer and live in Newport and you could not go to the beach. So if you think of, hey, I don't want to stay inside, you know, I want to be out right now. If they have to close the beaches, I think you're going to find it's going to be really tough in the middle of summer and you cannot touch the sand.
Yeah.
That would be. So just think about that. Don't think about, oh, if we stay inside, we can get to go to the festivals. If we stay inside now, we can go, you know, go to the beach.
Yeah, no question about it. It is, as you mentioned, the third largest economic driver here in Rhode Island in terms of influx. There are other events and sailing and this and the other, but the festivals stand out. They're also, you know, for me as a Rhode Islander, and I remember when I was in New York, I was there, I lived there for 10 years, obviously I remember it, but, you know, at different points when I'd say, oh, I'm from Rhode Island, people would say, oh, that's the home of Newport. And these are people from all over the world.
It's funny. We've done a better job of working with both the Rhode Island tourism, you know, at the CVB and Newport tourism and the Rhode Island tourism because, you know, America's Cup, whatever, not being, you know, it used to be, oh, America's Cup for a long time, like 80s, 90s, it was America's Cup. And then, you know, maybe the mansions. But it's amazing because of the positivity and I think the pride which Rhode Islanders should feel about these events. The fact that the money made at these events is coming back in and helping offset budget cuts to music education and bringing money and influx of people as tourism has shifted from people, you know, seeing how the 1% live in the museums, you know, is that something you really want to be like, hey, come see how the 1% live?
Right.
It's tough if you're a tourism person to be like, you know, let's look at the robber barons. to have something that has a positive feedback loop and like the festivals, I think is something that it makes us extremely happy that Newport in particular is proud of its festivals, meaning tourism wise. Like we're out on their marketing materials, and when they go to conferences, they feel like it's their, you know, yeah, we've got festivals. We've got the original festivals. What do you got? You know, I like that. I like that the Rhode Islanders feeling proud of something that they have that is known internationally.
Absolutely. It's a beacon for sure. You know, it's like the Super Bowl of the genre, no question about it, in a global sense. So
yeah, I mean, look, everybody, the Boston, you know, Boston's marathon has to be pushed. And then if you look at the Masters, if you're a golfer, that's got to be pushed. And you look at, they're going to announce tomorrow that Wimbledon, if you're in London, Wimbledon, that's one of their iconic things, right? Right now, as you and I are talking, there's still a chance that our iconic thing can happen. Like, and the reason I want to talk about that is obviously if you see other people canceling events that are even going into our time frame, that's because they do not have the benefit of the trust, and putting it on the trust of our audience, because when people all bought the tickets in the first 10 minutes of us going on sale, because of that trust, it is allowing us to go as far as we can to make the decision, because we're not having to sell the tickets. The tickets have been sold. So yes, a lot of people who are canceling because it's not because they think that we might be over this at their time. It's that nobody is buying tickets right now for any event. Why would you? Because you just be unsure, right? So let's just say they raise this magic curtain on Memorial Day, just making that up. If you have an event that's at the end of June and you're used to selling your tickets from January till June, and now you're trying to sell all your tickets from, you know, June 1st till June, end of June, that's a really tough gamble,
yeah,
right? Because you have to outlay all the costs now. So all these festivals that are canceling don't have the unique position that the folk festivals in particular, because we don't have to market. We don't have to, you know, we basically were asking the artist, can you wait as long as we can? Because if you can wait, then there's a chance it happens. So we're all just sitting here waiting to see. And I really want to give a big shout out to our fans, because that trust that we didn't know when they bought it then was going to basically have a byproduct of allowing us to be one of these events that can hold out till the very end to determine whether or not we should have the event.
Yeah, that is a special, very rare situation.
With all the other events, it's. I mean, I just don't know any other events that are like, yeah, we're just going to hold out, you know, so a very unique position, but it makes the, you know, what did Tom Petty say? The waiting is the hardest part. And again, to go back to why we originally had this conversation is we couldn't just sit between now and we have to make that decision, watching our folk and jazz families suffer and be full of fear. We're all afraid, but you got to hurt. I mean, you got to give till it hurts. You know, you just got to. There's that, where you just hunker in the bunker and don't do anything. And I'm not saying that's bad. And some people need to do that to feel safe. But we figure if we don't step up now, a lot of those artists might not be able to show up.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And you know, it's still going to be a challenge no matter what. But in terms of each individual artist managing their own life as they move forward through the next couple of months here, but at least with players such as your operation here, and hopefully RISCA and the operation they're putting together, federal government stimulus, etc., there'll be an opportunity for people to at least have basic needs met until we can resume the economy.
Yeah. And again, I have to do it is because we didn't set this out to be a fundraiser, but right now, if you can give anything, $5, $10, and you can, and in the notes, and if you go to the newportfestivals.org/donate and you'll see music education, but you'll also see general. And there's a note there that basically says the reason why it doesn't say music relief is you can put it in general and you can say, I'd like to only make sure that my money goes to Rhode Island or Newport artists, Rhode Island artists, or, you know, folk artists or jazz artists. It's allowing you to pick exactly where you want your five, 10, whatever. And $300 is our gifts are $300. So if you give $300, you will literally, we would tell people that the artists that we're giving it to, hey, there's just one family that is that this went to. It's a one-to-one. And again, this is 100 cents on the dollar. Our staff is, you know, paid separately. We're just basically a pass-through. We've gathered now only after being live for 25 hours. We have more data than on people in need than I think anybody in Rhode Island right now, as far as artists in need. So, I just want to let people know that we thought we could do it on our own. Meaning we thought the festival for the foundation could do it on our own. No, you need help.
Yeah. If you're out there and you want to support the festival's cast, so to speak. Yeah. And again,
that's right. That's a good job. if you want to support our cast of characters, and cast that to put on our big play, you know, they need it and we need it.
Yeah, no question. All right. Last question, your relationship. Mm-hmm. I know that the governor has mentioned that she has been in touch with the festival, Governor Raimondo, that is here in Rhode Island. Are you getting a sense that again, this is all
conjecture. That's fine. Yeah.
How can we possibly know anything? But from your perspective, is it a goal of the governor's to make the festivals happen this year?
Absolutely.
Is it a priority?
In fact, I get angry with her. I mean, this is a joke. She, by the way, to tell you what a incredible badass she is in so many respects, this isn't in touch. This is, and looking for weekly, we check in with each other. She knows how important this is to not just, you know, that sense of pride that this is their Boston Marathon, this Wimbledon, this is Rhode Island's big calling card to the world. She knows how important it is to musicians, to just the spirit, right? Because then it's kind of like, it's something we're all hoping can happen. And once that goes away, I think there's a deflation of spirit. And to say that she's a badass is, I keep getting mad at her saying, you should be using us as the PSA, being like, stay inside so these events can happen. These particular events, you need to do it, and you need to do it now. And I keep saying, feel free to use us. Like, I'm okay if you use our name as a direct reason and in a PSA, because I know she's trying. I can't imagine. I think, you know, my stress level is through the roof. But for a governor of a state to pick up a cell phone and in the middle of chaos check in with me regularly, I don't know. That's pretty cool, if you ask me. I mean, that there's no reason for her to do that, you know, but she knows that, if we don't have direct communication, things could, you know, so she's asking how I'm doing. I'm saying, what can I do? And you know, I think she was pretty excited about this program we announced yesterday in order to get it to where then the state can take over some of the heavy lifting. You know, we're all in this together. I know that's a trite phrase, and I think it can get overused a lot. But now I think this is more true now than ever before.
Yeah, just global ingenuity. It's beyond even American ingenuity, which has historically been able to solve a lot of these big problems. Now it's a whole nother level.
We're only going to solve this. There isn't a Jonah Salk out there who's going to come in and cure polio.
Yeah.
Like, the only way we make it through is everybody doing something. This has got to be group action, not one person saying, this is what you do and I'll solve it all for everybody. That is not happening. Yep. Like, we have to help each other solve it. And at the moment, the one thing that gets me up in the morning and not wanting to hunker in the bunker and throw my hands up and, you know, grab a bottle of tequila and drown my sorrows are these events. Yeah. And look, they still might be canceled, but until they are, I have to go forward thinking, like, if there's anything I can do to make these events happen, this is my job. This is my, it's not just my profession. It's my passion. It's my whole thing. And along the way, give hope, help artists, push music, use music as a drug, as a pacifier, as whatever it is to get over everything that we're going through. It's a great healing thing. I just don't want it to go away. I don't want the act of live music and be able to commune with each other and other music lovers and share experiences together, whether you're Black, white, gay, straight, you know, Republican, Democrat, like, those things all seem to go out the window when you're together at a music event. and you look at people you have known and you're smiling because something happened and it's great. That's what makes us human.
Yeah.
And I can't overstate that. It is a unifier. And I think especially for our state of Rhode Island, just want it to happen.
Yeah. Likewise.
So stay inside. Stay inside.
No doubt about it. Jay Sweet, ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you in July. No doubt about it. In my heart, I think we're going to be there.
I appreciate your allowing me to say my piece.
I appreciate you coming on very much.
All right, man. All right, see you later.
Thanks. Bye.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.